Hello and welcome. We're back tonight to talk about the need to have a legal subject matter for your contracts. It's very important to do that because a contract that's illegal or unlawful is a contract that's non-enforceable. Last time, as you may remember, we spoke about consideration. We gave you a definition. We talked about its general purposes, and we talked about its exceptions. Remember what consideration is. Consideration is a promise in return for a promise. It's giving something in order of value to the other party. It can be positive in that you give money or provide a service or do an act for that contractual agreement that the other party gives you. It can also be negative in that you forbear, it's called a forbearance, of doing an act which you are allowed to do. Now, tonight we're going to talk about legality. Remember, one of the elements of a contract is it has to have a legal subject matter. You cannot do an illegal contract. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. First, we're going to give you the definitions, and we're going to give you the general principles, the effect of illegality, the exceptions to illegality. What about a contract that's partially illegal? What about a contract that is not necessarily a crime, but a civil wrong? We call those torts. What about the issue that you have to negotiate in good faith and fairness? And lastly, you can't have a contract that's unconscionable. It means it's so unfair that it shocks the conscience of the court. Let's get right in. First, just a little bit of review, because remember, what is review? It is the mother of learning. A contract is an agreement, fundamental threshold thing. You have to agree with the other party. Excuse me. It has to be two or more parties. You can't just agree with yourself. It's not a contract. It has to create obligations on both sides that are enforceable or otherwise somehow recognizable by law. The elements of a contract has to be an agreement. The parties have to be competent. They have to understand what they're doing. They cannot be insane or intoxicated or of diminished mental capacity. They have to have the ability to agree, because if they don't have the ability to agree, how can you ever have an agreement? That agreement's got to be based on genuine assent. That means it's real. The parties actually agree. They don't just pretend to, they have to understand what they're agreeing to. It's got to be based on actual and genuine assent. It's got to be supported by consideration. The other party has to give you something of value for you in return giving them something of value. That's what we talked about the last time. And tonight what we're going to talk about is it's got to be for a lawful purpose subject matter. And lastly, it's got to be in legal form. The contract's got to be in writing, if it's got to be notarized, whatever those legal requirements are for the specific contract, then it's got to conform to that. Those are the elements of a contract. Now, in order to be a valid contract, it must be for a lawful purpose subject matter. What is legality? What does that mean? Legality is defined by Black's Law Dictionary to say strict adherence to the law, prescription or doctrine, the quality of being legal or in compliance with the law. Can't be violative, can't break the law. What's a subject matter? It's the issue or topic presented, represented, or performed in the contract. So what the contract is about, or what the contract does, or what you do in the contract, that is the subject matter. All of that has to be legal. When something's not legal, it's called illegal. And what is the definition of that? Black says it's an act that's not authorized by law, or a state or condition of being unlawful, meaning in contravention or against the law. Now, what is the issue of legality? Excuse me. An agreement is illegal when the formation or performance, that means the making of the contract or the performance, is a crime or a tort, or when its provisions are unconscionable, oppressive, unfair, or made in bad faith. Those are all the elements that make it illegal. More specifically, the concept of illegality embraces situations which a statute or case law declares that certain conduct that is to be performed in the contract is unlawful. Because of what? Because either the contract requires or results in. It's either one of those. The contract requires or results in the commission of a crime, the commission of a tort, that the terms of that contract are unconscionable, I mean they're so unfair that they shock the conscience of the court, or that the terms are so extraordinarily unfair or oppressive, or that they were made in bad faith, such as fraud. What's the effect of illegality? What happens if one of those four things is the subject matter of the contract? Ordinarily, an illegal agreement is void. That means it has no enforceability, has no effect in law. When the agreement is illegal, the parties are usually not entitled to any aid whatsoever from the courts. The contract is void. When an agreement is illegal or made for an illegal purpose, it is void as a matter of law, and because no contract in law can arise, because that essential element of being for a legal purpose subject matter is not met. So you have no contract. It's not just that the court won't enforce it. There is no contract to enforce. This occurs whether the legal agreement has not been performed yet, or if it has been performed. Either way, it's not enforceable because it fails as a contract as a matter of law, because it doesn't have that essential element, which is required to be a contract, of having a legal purpose subject matter. What are some of the exceptions for an illegal contract? Well, if the law that it violates is intended to protect one of the parties, and that party gets hurt by the contract, then the law will enforce it against the guilty party, against the person who is the perpetrator of that issue. So when the law has an agreement that violates, that is intended to protect somebody, the law will protect that person. So if I have a contract with like a usurious interest rate, they'll protect me. Why? Because I wasn't the one that's charging the interest rate. I'm the one that's getting the money. So that contract will be non-enforceable. It'll be used for my benefit. Now, there's another exception. It is where the parties are not of equal guilt. If they are of equal guilt, both of them make a contract to murder somebody, okay? Then there's no intervention in the courts, because why? It's not a contract. But where they're of unequal guilt, that's an affirmative defense. It's kind of like the circumstance above where there is the protection of one party, where one party didn't know it was a crime, or where the crime relates to the protection of that party and it gets violated by the other party. That affirmative defense is called in pari delicto, meaning that they're not, it's a Latin phrase, meaning that the guilty party is not the one who is seeking a remedy of the court. So where you have that, the court will enforce a contract from the non-guilty party. Where both parties are guilty, they won't enforce anything because there's no contract. What about where a contract does multiple things and part of it is illegal? What will the courts do on that? Well, if the illegality is immaterial, it's a very small part of the contract. To give you an example, I contract with somebody like Smokey and the Bandit to bring me some clam chowder from Boston within 8 hours of its manufacture, and they have to speed in order to get it to my factory in time. Okay. Well, I can still sue on that, but I probably can't enforce the timeliness factor of it, because if it's demonstrated that I can only get that if they sped, I can still say, hey, listen, you got to deliver the clam chowder. I got to pay you for that expenses of getting there, but I can't hold you that time frame because you would have to spend to do it. So when the illegality is not an essential element of the contract, then, and when it is what we call severable, if you can't sever the illegality from the contractual terms, then you have no contract. But where you can sever that, then you do, and that's what the courts do. They take out the illegal part and they enforce that which is legal. Okay. What's the difference between a crime and a civil wrong? Not everything that is illegal is a crime. Now, all crimes are illegal, but not all activities who are illegal are crimes. Some of them are what we call civil wrongs or what we call a tort. An agreement is illegal and therefore void when it calls for the commission of any act which constitutes a crime. So if it's a crime, it's totally illegal. But it can also be illegal when it calls for a civil wrong that is also illegal. But as we said, they're not the same thing. Some illegal contracts are such a serious violation of law that the performance of the contract makes that a crime, makes it a criminal act, which is prosecutable. You can go to jail for it. You can be fined for it. There is a difference, however, between criminal conduct that is illegal and non-criminal conduct, which is just merely what we call unlawful. Not all illegal contracts are criminal. Sometimes they're merely unlawful. Sometimes they're just a violation of a statute or common law that merely forbids a type of conduct which does not rise to the level of a criminal offense. This is not concerned with criminal prosecution. It just means you cannot do it. So as a result of that, I'll give you a couple of examples of this. If I want to interfere with your patent rights, if I defraud you, an agreement to slander, say naughty things about somebody. Those are all torts, but they're not necessarily a crime. So as a result of that, remember, even though they are all illegal and the contract fails as a matter of law because you have to have a legal purpose subject matter, realize that not all contracts that fail for legality are as a result of a crime. Some of them are merely because it's unlawful and unseemly to the court. Now, good faith and fair dealing. There is an implied obligation in every contract that neither party shall do anything that will have the effect of destroying or injuring the right of the other party to receive the fruits of their contract. It's an implied covenant, that means an agreement, that I'm going to deal with you in good faith. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean, that I'm doing it fair, and that I'm doing it in such a manner that you will eventually get what we promise. This is the anti-fraud issue. With fraud, it is, as we discussed the last time, the intentional misrepresentation of a material fact. This is the flip side of that. Whereas I can't commit fraud, I also have to deal with you in good faith. And this general obligation under the law, this implied covenant that requires a fact that the construed terms of the contract must be an obligation in good faith, has been held under law to be a firm contract. Now, this is based on the reasonable expectation of the parties. What I might say is good faith, you may not. You may say that's just driving a hard bargain. So it's got to be looked upon through what we call the reasonable person standard. So where the court, which are very reluctant from going down this road, look at it and says, what are the reasonable expectations of the parties in the context of the transaction? If they are unreasonable to any person who has any level of reason, it can fail for lack of good faith and fair dealing. But if one party might say, that's just driving a hard bargain, this will not prevail. Lastly, unconscionability. What is unconscionability? Generally, because of freedom of contract, the courts will not interfere on whether or not your consideration is sufficient, as we talked about the last time, whether the bargain is what we might consider fair or not. They don't want to get into that level because they want to have people have total freedom of contract. However, there are circumstances where it shocks the conscience of the court. It says that this contract is so unseemly, so unfair, and so unreasonable that the court will not enforce it. Black's Law Dictionary defines unconscionability as a contract term that unreasonably favors the other party and which are so unreasonably, remember unreasonably, unfair or oppressive that they shock the conscience of the court. What they say is no reasonable person would impose this requirement on the other party, and that no reasonable person would accept that. It's almost a justification for doing something under duress or taking advantage of the other party. Ordinarily, as we said, a court will not consider whether a contract is fair or unfair, whether it's wise or foolish, or operates unequally between the two parties, because those are very subjective terms. But in certain very unusual circumstances, the law may hold that a contract provision is unenforceable because it is simply too harsh. It's too oppressive on one of the parties. What constitutes unconscionability? When will a court go down there? It is an equitable remedy. In equity at common law was a court that was concerned about fairness. As we talked about previously, an equity judge under common law was a clergyman. They weren't lawyers. You dealt with fundamental fairness. The maximum in equity was equity delights to do justice. It's an issue of justice, but it is rarely imposed by the court, because when the court imposes that, it takes away a freedom of contract. Because what's reasonable to one person may not be to another. It takes away your freedom. So this is used only in extraordinary circumstances where it is clear to everyone, because it's a reasonable person standard, that this is someone taking advantage unfairly and wrongfully about another person. Determination of unconscionability comes down to two things: procedural unconscionability and substantive unconscionability. And the courts have generally said you need both. Procedural unconscionability has to do with matters of freedom of assent resulting from inequality of bargaining power. Basically, that says, I am using my position with you to take advantage of you. That was what we talked about the last time relating to unjust enrichment. I am taking advantage of you. And this unconscionability clause says you can't do that. Substantive unconscionability focuses on the actual term of the contract itself, whereas procedural unconscionability focuses on the two parties. The substantive unconscionability focuses on the contractual terms. So where you have one party taking advantage of somebody because of their personal relationship, and where the terms are so bad that they use that personal relationship to get something that is so oppressive and so obscene to a reasonable person, the court will often refuse enforcement. That's unconscionability. It's rarely used, as we said, but when it is, it can strike down the contract. That's it for legality. Next time, we're on to public policy. Thanks so much for listening.